Okay, so I'm going to talk now about this incident of Legion and the curing of Legion. You remember the story how Jesus rocks up in the country of the Gadarenes and there's this madman meets him, and I want to base our thoughts on Mark's record in Mark chapter 5. And this guy is obviously very disturbed, and Jesus, it says, cast the demons out of him and into some pigs, and the pigs go running over the cliff and into the sea, where they all drown, and then the man is declared better. Now, it could seem then from this and other incidents like this that demons actually exist. And I want to just go over some ground that maybe we covered before, that God is almighty. And if God is almighty, it cannot be the case that there is sort of up in heaven some sort of cosmic conflict going on. 50% of the power with God, 50% with Satan, and they're kind of battling it out up there. It can't be like that. God says in Isaiah 45, 5-7, that I, the Lord, am the only God, and I create evil, in the sense of the negative things, disaster, and I create good. I create the light, and I create the darkness. And in Isaiah's context, he was clearly referring there to the ideas that were common in Babylon at the time, where Israel were in captivity, or Judah was in captivity, that there is this kind of dualism in the cosmos, that there is the good God and the bad God. And actually that is there in all religious systems, it seems to me, including in mistaken Christianity and in about every religion. That is that idea of duality. And I think that the Bible, in my opinion, is unique, really, in emphasizing the almightiness of God, that he has no cosmic battle up there. We pray in the Our Father, may your kingdom come, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And so God's will is sovereign, is done in heaven completely, absolutely and completely. And I don't think, therefore, that there can be a load of evil in the sense of moral wickedness up there with God. And yet, what are we to make of these passages in the Gospels that talk about Jesus casting out demons? Well, I want to suggest that this is the language of the day for curing mental illness. And just to start off with, I think we have to ask ourselves, does the Bible use the language of the day? And yes, it does. It is God's word. And yet it is also written in human terms. And it's written from the perspective of people on earth. In other words, it doesn't claim to be a scientific textbook. And the classic example, I suppose, is the record of creation in Genesis. That is not aiming to be a scientific explanation of whatever happened when God created everything. The Bible talks about the sun rising and the sun setting. Well, that is from our perspective. And the Bible also does not, maybe as we might do, sort of all the time put little footnotes in saying, and by the way, this isn't true. For example, Jesus says, when they say to him, you're doing miracles by Beelzebub, he says, well, if I do miracles by Beelzebub, then by whom do your sons do their miracles? And he says, if Satan cast out Satan, then Satan's gonna fall. He doesn't say, oh no, guys, by the way, Beelzebub was a pagan god, and you can read about Beelzebub in the Old Testament as just a pagan idol, and idols don't exist. He takes them from where they are, and says, as if to say, okay, you want to believe in Beelzebub, okay, let's just follow your logic through. He doesn't all the time try and attack their wrong ideas. And I think that is particularly the case with this language of demons, that this belief in evil spirits and demons is absolutely entrenched in a lot of people's mentality, particularly in, let's say, Africa and Asia. And I guess it was in first century Palestine. I once made a list of all the miracles that involve, quote, casting out of demons. And I find that they're nearly all recorded within the first year of Christ's ministry. In other words, as the Gospels go on, you don't read about this casting out of demons. And when the Gospels finish and you start to read Acts and then the letters of Paul, you also don't read about demons being cast out. You read about Paul and the apostles doing miracles and healing people, but there's no talk about casting out demons. And I wonder if that's simply because Jesus, in a very beautiful way, made his point that as people reflected on the whole thing, they perceived that actually, even if these things exist, the power of God and the power of Jesus is so much greater that effectively they have no effective existence. Another general point I'd make about demons is that demons were understood in the first century as idols. And they made an idol on earth to a demon, a little god. That's what they really thought these demons were. 1 Corinthians 10, I think, makes that point, that connection between demons and idols. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 20. Things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. Verse 19, am I saying that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? No, I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice are sacrificed to demons and not to God. You can't drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You can't be partakers of the Lord's table and of the table of demons. Here he's putting in parallel demons and idols. And if you get back to 1 Corinthians 8, verses 4 to 6, he talks about the things sacrificed unto idols in verse 4. And he says, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and there is no other God but one. To us there is but one God, the Father. So then he equates demons and idols in chapter 10, and then in chapter 8 he says that idols have no real existence, although there's many of them. And as he says, verse 5, there are gods many and lords many, but to us there is but one God. So belief in the unity of God, that God is one, this actually precludes belief in any other little God existing. And so I would say on that basis that demons therefore cannot have any real existence. And yet when we come to these passages in the Gospels that talk about demons being cast out, it would appear that the records speak of these things as if they really exist. But with all Bible study, you've got to put the scriptures together. And if there in 1 Corinthians and throughout the Old Testament, we're told that demons in the sense of idols have no real existence, God is the only power, then what are we to make of these descriptions here in Mark 5, etc., of demons being cast out? Well, I would say then that this is simply using the language of the day for any illness or situation that people did not understand. That's why nearly all these castings out of demons we could understand as curing the mentally disturbed. So then I want to go through now what we've read here, but in Mark 5. But before I do that, I would make the point that this passage is difficult, I think, for anyone to really explain, even if they believe in demons. Because clearly this guy was mentally disturbed, right? Because when he's cured, when the demon has supposedly gone out of him, verse 15 of Mark 5, he is sitting and clothed and in his right mind. Mark 5:15. So then the demons are thrown out of him, and now he's in his right mind. So the language of having demons is the same, it's another way of saying he was mentally disturbed. And just I'm going to quote earlier Matthew 8:16 and 17. They bring to Jesus many that were possessed with demons, and he cast out the spirits with his word and healed the sick, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses. So then the healing of people is the same as casting out demons, which is the same as curing sickness. That's clearly the teaching of that Matthew 8, 16 and 17, is what it says. So, as I said, we have a question. We encounter mentally ill people, as Jesus did, we do today. Is mental illness caused by demons, or is it not? That's the question. It is true to say that in primitive societies, they would say, yes, it's caused by demons. But we encounter mental illness. We encounter multiple personality disorder, just as we got here with Legion. Is this from demons or is this not? And I remember many years ago being in northern Ghana, and I went to stay with a man who was a very devout man, and he told me, you know what, my wife has just left me. She's gone off with another guy who's very wealthy. And I said, I'm really sorry to hear that. And he said, you know, she was a really good woman. She was like nice-natured, good kind of woman. But the problem with her was that at night she always slept with her mouth open. And then he explained to me what he meant, that he honestly believed that because she slept with her mouth open, the demons got into her, and that's why she cleared off with another guy. Now, that may sound a simple little story, but I keep coming back to that recollection of that man, because either demons are around getting into people and possessing people, or they are not. And if we decide they are not, then I think we have no option but to accept all these descriptions here of demons being thrown out, etc., as another way of saying curing mental illness. So, what causes multiple personality disorder? What causes people like Legion to get crazy? And how can they be cured? I mean, the fact that there is medically mediated change in mentally ill people. In other words, medical science can cure some mental illness. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that because of complex chemicals compacted into little white tablets, demons run away? Of course not. How is it that psychotherapy can produce major changes in mentally disturbed people? Does that psychotherapy really scare demons off? I think not. So that's a hard question. That's why I say that whatever reading we have of this passage, it's a difficult passage for all of us, because even if one is the most desperately committed to the belief that demons exist and cause illness, okay, what are we to make of this then? I mean, are we really going to say that we believe, for example, that when the demons were supposedly thrown out of this guy and 2,000 of them get inside 2,000 pigs and the pigs run into the sea, are we to believe then that demons drown? Can the demon drown? Well, I assume not. So I would say that logically, to read this and say, yeah, this is proof demons exist, it may be on a surface level, but with closer analysis and thought and reflection, I would suggest that it proves too much and it makes all kind of difficulties. Now, as I say, the connection between demon possession and mental illness is pretty strong. As I say, the demons are thrown out, and then here in verse 15, afterwards he's in his right mind. So to have demons was to be in your wrong mind. They said about Jesus, and if you want the reference, it's John 10, verse 20, he has a demon and he is mad. There's a clear connection between supposedly having a demon and being crazy, being mentally disturbed. Now, I'd like to look in more detail at what this man says. Here in Mark 5, if you like to look at verse 9, he, the man, answered Jesus, saying, my name is Legion, in the singular. The man, he answered, saying, my name is Legion, for we are many. And then in verse 9, it says there that, verse 10, he, the man, besought Jesus that he wouldn't send them away, out of the country. Verse 12, all the demons besought Jesus, saying, send us into the swine. Well, there's a connection between all the demons and the man. He's clearly a classic case, I would say, of multiple personality disorder. He talks about as himself as if he's many people. So then I think that this would be diagnosed today as maybe schizophrenia, some form of mental illness. And the fact that he has got this huge strength, verse 4, that he was bound with fetters and chains and then he could just break them apart with this very strange strength, that again is rather typical of mental illness. And verse 5, he's crying, he's shouting out, and he's cutting himself with stones. Now, self-harm is, this is a classic case. This is absolute classic case of somebody who's mentally disturbed. Now, you can go to psychiatric hospitals today and meet people who would have all the characteristics of Legion. And you can also meet people who respond well to medication and their condition changes. Now, it is too much to believe that demons run away because of little white tablets that are swallowed and because of psychotherapy and the rest of it. So I really think that there's no question, but we have to accept that this is language of the day. And in talking to doctors in Africa, and I lived in a little village in Africa for 2 years, many years ago, two doctors who I raised this matter with, they said that they would actually go along with the ideas that the village people had about demons, because it was so deeply entrenched in their thinking. For example, a doctor would put a cup of water on the table, a glass of water, let's say, on the table, and deal with a person, give them the tablets, medication for something or other, and then tip a little bit of water out of the glass and say, you know what, you see that? The demons run away, and while they're running out of you, they knock the water over. In other words, those doctors were talking in the language of the day, which those people understood. And that's going on today in primitive Africa, in, let's say, primitive parts of Africa is what I mean. Using the language of demons, because it is so deeply inside people, this belief. The fact that we as Europeans don't have this idea so deep in the core of our being does not mean that most of the world actually doesn't. And I think it's so deep that Jesus didn't challenge it. He didn't, as it were, challenge every wrong belief, every wrong attitude that he encountered. He always seems to have more indirectly sorted it out. And I think by the magnitude of his miracles, he was really showing that, basically, effectively, these things don't exist. Now, mental illness is not a stable condition. People go through times when they are better than others, when they are apparently normal in social terms, and then they relapse. And I think that this man was very scared of this, that it was going to happen again. And I wondered if Jesus sent all those pigs over the cliff because he thought that it would be a kind of a very dramatic visual thing that the guy would remember all his life, that actually his illness had permanently gone. It's rather like the scapegoat in the wilderness, that Israel put their sins on the scapegoat and then they let it go free. And as they saw the goat running away, they would have remembered that, and that was a symbol to them, a visual symbol of the fact that their sins had gone. And I wondered if this was the same here, that Jesus is saying, look, all this stuff you've got inside you, it's really gone. And he would have remembered the noise of the pigs drowning, etc., for a long time. And of course, the Jews should not have been keeping pigs. They were unclean animals. Now, a friend of mine also pointed out to me that the madness that he had may have been the result of an infection in his brain from the little parasites which are found in the muscles of pigs. And if he had been eating raw pork or undercooked pork, this could have actually been related to his illness. And it was therefore appropriate that the pigs run over the cliff, as if to show that the man, that actually the cause of his illness had gone. That's just a suggestion that may not have been the case at all. But I'll just throw that out. Now I'd like to come on then to look at exactly what was the matter with this guy in a little bit more detail. You'll see in verse 7 that the man says, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, you Son of the Most High God?" This man had some understanding of Jesus, and he recognizes him as the Son of God. There are three times in Mark's Gospel where the, quote, demon-possessed, what I would say are mentally disturbed people, they say, "You are the Son of God." Since when would literal demons believe that Jesus was the Son of God? Why is there this connection three times in Mark between being, quote, demon-possessed and believing in Jesus as the Son of God? Especially when all the Gospels, and that includes Mark, keep on making the point that the disciples didn't seem to quite get it, that Jesus really was the Son of God. And particularly, the mass of people did not understand that Jesus was the Son of God. Why did the, quote, demon-possessed perceive that he was the Son of God? I would have thought, if the classical view of demons is correct, the demons get inside people and tell them Jesus doesn't exist, or Jesus is not the Son of God, there is no God, don't believe in Jesus. But the demon-possessed believe in Jesus. That's a big problem for the classical view, because why is it the demon-possessed who believe in Jesus as the Son of God? Now, if you accept that, as I'm trying to suggest, that, quote, demon possession basically equals mental illness, that makes sense, because the mentally disturbed are often far more spiritually perceptive than the rest of us, but you know what I mean, than the normal, quote, normal people. And so that would make sense to me, and it would also fit in with a great theme that you have in the Gospels of how, who was it who really understood Jesus as Son of God, who really believed in Jesus? It was the marginalized and the despised. It was the women, the slaves, the prostitutes, the Gentiles, the people on the edge of society, the mentally disturbed. These were the kinds of people who accepted Christianity. So I would say the fact that three, quote, demon-possessed people in Mark accept Jesus as the Son of God, I would argue that's pretty hard to explain. If demons are wicked and evil, I would say it makes perfect sense if demon possession is really mental illness. Anyway, Legion understood that Jesus was the Son of God. Jesus asks him, verse 9, "What's your name?" I don't think that's because Jesus didn't know. I think it's part of his therapy. And you could argue that Jesus was not only a doer of miracles by the power of God, but he was, as some bright sparks said, the village psychotherapist. He had a huge understanding of human beings. He knew what was in man. And so when he says to Legion, "What's your name, buddy?" And the guy says, "My name's Legion." That was part, I think, of the cure. Because the obvious connection is that legion, this was what the Roman legions, it's the same word for the Roman legions. This is how everybody would have understood the word legion. It referred to a large regiment, a battalion of 5,000 to 6,000 Roman soldiers. That's the obvious connection of the word legion. If you ask anyone, so what was a legion? People would say, well, it's a group of Roman soldiers. Okay. Jesus says to this guy, so what's your name, buddy? Me? My name's Legion. Now, there is evidence in the in Josephus and in the what historical records we have of the first century that the Jews referred to the Romans as the pigs, just like people talk about the police today as the pigs. And there was a Roman battalion stationed at Gadara, and this is, and Josephus talks about that. And here, verse 1, this happens in the country of the Gadarenes. So there was apparently a group of Roman soldiers stationed there. And probably these pigs were being kept to feed them. So the joke would have been, these are pigs for the pigs. And also that the Roman 10th Legion, that there was basically one legion assigned to Judea at that time, and the 10th Legion, it was the 10th Legion that was assigned, they had on their totem a pig. That was their symbol, if you like. So then, this guy is saying, I am possessed by legion, by legions, we're many. And I think that this person was Jewish, and that he was very committed to his people, and he felt that in the same way as the Roman legions, or legion, that the Roman legionaries, I should say, the pigs, as it were possessing his land, so he had internalized that to feel that actually they were possessing him. And I think that Jesus is realizing that, and he's saying, look, because of me, Jesus, the time is coming when the pigs, the Romans, will be out of this country, and they will be over the edge. Now, jumping over a cliff or being thrown over a cliff was a form of execution, and it still is in a lot of primitive societies, to kick someone over a cliff. This is an execution. This is... this has significance. And you might remember that they tried to do it to Jesus. They tried to push him over a cliff, but he just managed to walk away through the midst of them. This man was, verse 5, cutting himself with stones. And I wonder if that was his self-hatred was... maybe because he felt that the Romans were not only inside his country, they were inside him as a person. And he felt that he should be condemned, felt bad about himself. This is classic mental illness. That he should be condemned by cutting himself with stones. He was stoning himself, as if, and again, stoning is a kind of execution. He's saying, I should be condemned. I should be thrown over the edge by the crowd that's running to lynch me. And I think that's why Jesus sends the pigs over the edge, as if to say, look, all the demons, all the Romans that are in your country, that are in you, they're gone. Now, in researching this, I came across a word I had never met before, auto-lapidation. Auto-lapidation, medical word. And it just simply means self-stoning. And apparently, psychologists looking at people, particularly in primitive societies, have noticed this, that there's a great desire in countries which practice stoning, execution by stoning. The mentally ill people will often cut themselves with stones. as if to say, I should be killed. And I think Jesus is taking all this guilt away from him. And that's why he says to him, what's your name, buddy? And he says, I'm Legion. As if he's trying to get the man to realize, yes, you think the pigs, the Romans, are right inside you. You know what? You see all those pigs over there that are feeding the Roman pigs? They are the ones that I'm going to condemn. Not you. You have to cut yourself with stones because you so hate what's inside you. I'll put them all over the edge in a very dramatic way. And I think that this idea that he had, that the Romans were inside him and he so hated this, I wonder if that is what gives him the strength in verse 4 to burst every fetter and chain that is put upon him. Because he feels that he's Judah in captivity, that he's Judah in slavery to the Romans. And he can therefore find the strength to burst this from him. We're sitting here in Latvia as we have this discussion. And this country, as you know, was for a number of years, for a couple of generations, under the domination of the Soviet Union. And there was a huge amount of abuse that happened to so many people, particularly Latvians. And I think that is related now, it is one explanation, of the fact that here in Latvia, as we sit here, this country has, on many indicators, one of the highest suicide rates in the world, and one of the highest incidences of mental illness. The same is true in Lithuania. For two tiny little countries, they're right up the top of the tables in terms of suicide and in terms of mental illness per 100 population. And if you were to take the Russian population out of that and look specifically at pure Baltic Latvians and Lithuanians, I think you'd find it would be astronomical. This fits in with the extensive writings of a guy called Franz Fanon, who wrote about the psychological damage done by French colonialism. The case studies he gave were Martinique in the Caribbean and Algeria. And with all this stuff, you can say it's maybe exaggerated, maybe the researchers are trying to prove a point or justify themselves or whatever. But his point was that if you were, say, a darker-skinned person, or basically a black guy or in Martinique, or a darker-skinned Arab in North African Arab in Algeria, you came to feel very bad about yourself because your country was occupied by the whites, and you started to feel very bad about yourself because of that. Part of you wanted to fight them. Part of you submitted totally to the new mentality that was put upon you. And this guy Fanon lists at great length all the mental illness that he as a psychiatrist had diagnosed in Martinique and in Algeria. And he blames all this largely on the experience of French colonialism. And he says before they came, there was not this kind of problem. And those remote villages that were not touched by colonialism so much didn't have these problems. And he talks there about the disintegration of personality as a result of oppression and abuse by foreigners who've come and colonized you. He keeps talking about the word splitting and dissolution within human personality. And I think that there's some truth in that. And as I say, the people may be, you know, trying to justify their own side or whatever in a political dispute, but I think there is truth in that. So here we have first century Palestine, again an occupied territory, occupied by the Romans, and here is a sensitive-minded guy, who's calling himself Legion, who just can't cope with it, that his country is possessed. And he feels that he, therefore, has been possessed. He feels bad and dirty about himself. And so Jesus is showing him, look, the pigs, the Romans, I can send them to eternal condemnation and total destruction. I'm going to chuck them over the edge. So I think that when he says, my name is Legion, he had internalized his abusers or his persecutors. And that idea of internalized oppression, which psychiatrists and social scientists talk about internalizing abuse. I think it's very true in that. What they mean by that is that the person who's been abused or oppressed takes it so deeply into themselves that they feel as if they are that person. In the same way as he felt that he was Legion. My name is Legion. And I think that's why the abused so often abuse. It's internalizing oppression so that you act as the person that you hate the most and the person that is so hurting you. And I would comment again that the situation we see here in Latvia, some Latvians will treat Russians exactly how Russian people treated them. They've internalized the oppression. And it is why at times Israel has behaved extremely cruelly and abusively to Palestinians, in some cases. They have almost done to them, some of them, at some times, what the Nazis did to the Jews. Those people have internalized oppression. And I think this is why, when Jesus says to this Jewish nationalist, as I think this guy was, "What's your name, buddy?" He says, "My name's Legion." And Jesus wanted him to think about that. You're not Legion. And so when Jesus casts out all these, throws all these pigs over the edge, I think he's saying, okay, you think that you're possessed by demons, you're possessed by the Romans. I'm telling you, I can bring Rome right down to nothing. I throw them, the pigs, the Romans, over the cliff. They are the ones who need condemnation and not you. And this is, I think, quite typical of how Jesus acts and acted, putting the focus upon putting the focus the right way round. He's saying to the man, look, all these things that you're feeling so bad about and they're screwing you up, I take them out of you and I throw them away, and now you just go back and live a normal life. Well, that, I may be wrong in all that. That's my personal speculation about what was actually the matter with this man. But coming back to the basic problem, do demons exist or do they not? I think if we're going to use this passage to say they exist, we're making more problems for ourselves than we solve, because do demons make you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? Well, in the classical view, no, they don't. Are demons scared of drowning? They beseech Jesus, don't send us out of the country. In Matthew they say, don't send us into the sea, and Jesus does. Why, you know, can demons drown? Well, I think not. Is it really so that this sort of case of mental illness and disturbance is caused by demons? How do the demons decide who to possess? Do they say, oh yeah, we'll possess that guy but not that girl, and this one there but not that one there? On what basis does this happen? And why is it that people with exactly the same symptoms as the, quote, mentally disturbed, as the so-called demon-possessed that you read about here, can be cured or have their situation ameliorated, improved by medical science? How come? And why is it that belief in demons is so geographically defined? Why is it that most people in Africa believe in demons and will blame mental illness on demons, but here in Europe most people would not blame mental illness on demons? How come? The demons operate more in Africa than they do in Europe? I think not. It's simply that belief in demons is, I think, a cultural thing that varies with geography. But the truth of the matter is that God is all-powerful, and whatever dark forces there are out there, God is so infinitely greater than them that we don't have to worry about them to the point of, I would say, not believing in their existence. The fundamental struggle which we are invited to have is a battle within the human mind, not a battle between me and beings out in the cosmos or hiding under the table, but the struggle against human temptation, that I want to do this, don't do it. That's the essence of Christianity, to be spiritually minded. That's the essence of it all. And the real, let's say, arena of the conflict is within the human mind and not between us and some external being.